Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil, olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, The Legend of the Mountain, was written by Morton Wishengrad and stars Raymond Massey as Walt Whitman.
I see something of God each hour of the 24. In the faces of men and women I see God. And in my own face in the glass, I find letters from God dropped in the street, and every one is signed by God's name. And I leave them where they are, for I know that wheresoe'er I go, others will punctually come forever and ever.
His name is Walt Whitman, and up beyond Lake Nineveh in the country this side of Sinai Mountain, they have a legend about him. I should tell you that people here, like people in Vermont, look with favor on names like Sinai and Nineveh. They're not like people you know. Perhaps it's because the country is different, with a lost, wistful look about it, and sunshine that's sad, and nights that are lonelier than most. How many times did Walt Whitman come? And was he dead when he came, or still alive, or not even born? No one seems to know, but he did come. And I'll tell you the story the way it's been told to me. There were two brothers. One was named Adam, and one was called Ephraim. And each had a farm high up on Sinai Mountain, which could have been Vermont. Every year they farmed the land, and every year each harvested for himself 100 bushels of grain. Maybe Walt Whitman heard about the 100 bushels that never failed. Or maybe he heard that Adam didn't have a wife. And so he walked all the way from the island of Manhattan to where Adam was plowing in the field.
Hello, Adam.
Whoa.
I know your name.
All right.
Leave the plow for a minute. Come here and sit down.
Who are you?
It doesn't matter. I came a long way, and I want to talk to you.
Well, you can talk. I'll stand here.
Very well, Adam. Then I'll stand, too.
Well, suit yourself.
Adam, why are you plowing?
Break the ground for the seed.
Why?
I fight the ground. You have to fight to live.
An animal fights for life, too. Adam, are you better than an animal?
I don't know. I hadn't thought of it.
If you had a wife, she might help you think.
My brother Ephraim has a wife.
There is someone, Adam, isn't there?
Well, look at me. Look at my face. Look at my hair, my hands, my great big clumsy feet.
Her name is Esther, isn't it?
Quit. It's not your affair. Go away and let me be.
Adam. Man, that's what your name means. Adam, listen to me. What have you thought of yourself? Is it that you thought the president greater than you? Or the rich better off than you? Or the educated wiser than you? Because you were greasy and pimpled, or were once drunk or a thief? Or that you are no scholar and never saw your name in print? Do you give in that you are any less immortal?
Why have you come here? Who are you? What do you want from me?
I find you animal. I want you human.
What concern is it of yours?
Every man is my concern. Every man created in a greater image.
I'm not like that. I'm nothing but a farmer. I plant seed and I harvest grain.
The sum of all known reverence I add up in you. Laws, courts, the forming of states, the charters of cities, the going and coming of commerce and mails are all for you. Sculpture and monuments and anything inscribed anywhere are tallied in you. If you were not breathing and walking here, where would they all be? Adam, all music is what awakens from you when you are reminded by the instruments.
They stood there on Sinai Mountain, which could have been Vermont, not saying any more words. And then Walt Whitman went away, leaving Adam alone in the field. That night, Adam took some ashes, for he had no soap, and he scrubbed his face and his arms and his neck and washed himself clean with rainwater. He scraped the dirt from his shoes, and he walked down the mountain to speak to Esther.
I've been living like an animal, but I'm a human man. Esther, could you find it in your heart to marry me?
Adam, why did it take you such a long time to ask?
At the foot of Sinai Mountain, you'll find a little clapboard and shingle house. Actually, it isn't more than a one-room hut. But it's a house of worship, meeting hall, burying parlor, and place to get born in. Adam's brother Ephraim came for the wedding, and Jenny, his wife, and the people who lived near Lake Nineveh.
Adam, do you think the stranger will come?
I don't know. But you'll be able to tell him by his signs. A rain-proof coat, good shoes, and the staff cut from the woods.
There was no merrymaking, for they waited for the stranger to reappear.
Well, I guess it's
fun. Then the guests began to leave.
Before I go, I'll lift a glass of elderberry wine to your happiness.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
A toast. Fertile land and fertile wives. That's what I always say.
The last guest departed, and only the two brothers and their wives remained. They waited. Esther saw him first.
On the road from Nineveh. He has the look of a man who tramps a perpetual journey.
He came right up to them, a stranger. They didn't even know his name. And he bent down without a single word, and he kissed the bride.
Thank you. We've waited for you.
I'm sorry. I've walked from Manhattan to Sinai Mountain. It's a long way, yet much closer than you think.
But you've come too late to celebrate.
No, Esther. I celebrate myself and sing myself and what I assume you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you.
Then Walt Whitman did a strange thing. He held out his hands, the fingers spread. The fingers spread the way Aaron had once spread his own fingers in the Egyptian desert. And the two brothers and their two wives bent their heads toward him for a blessing.
You shall possess the good of the earth and sun. There are millions of suns left. You shall no longer take things at second or third hand, nor look through the eyes of the dead, nor feed on the specters in books. You shall not look through my eyes either, nor take things from me. You shall listen from all sides and filter them from yourself.
Raise your head, Adam. The blessing has finished. Sir, I do not know you, but you came to me and kissed my lips.
I came to kiss a bride. I will come a second time when you are again a bride.
The brothers and their wives went up the mountain to work their separate land. Ephraim broke the ground on the south slope, Adam on the west slope. They put in the seed and they waited for the rain. Two brothers separated by land. The rain came, watering the seed, and the sun followed, warming the wet earth, and quickening the seed to life. And by a similarity of design, there was within Esther a quickening of life also.
Adam, are you curious to know why I've asked you to walk into the field on the Sabbath?
I'm satisfied to walk with you, Esther.
But you should be curious.
You brought me here so that we could both see how the seed planted has ripened into grain.
Adam, I brought you here
to... You're tired, Esther. There's sweat on your lip. I'll wipe it off.
I have something to tell you,
Adam. I have something to tell you. Oh, you were fine to look at before when you were a girl. But not like now.
Adam, I've listened to you. Now you listen to me.
You're very grave. Gravity is becoming with gray eyes, Esther. Oh, I embarrass you. I think a husband should speak such things when he has a mind for it. But if you're displeased, we shall talk about the grain.
Adam, all I want to tell you
we
is...
We shall have a fine harvest. At least 100 bushels of good grain.
Adam, you're a stick. A clod who can talk about nothing but grain ripening in the field and harvest.
Why not? The planting, the ripening, and the harvest. That's all there is for all things living.
And for me. Did you know that, Adam?
I knew. Esther, even if I were blind, I would have known. Only to be near you, and I would have known. May I bring my harvest home. And Esther, may you bring home yours.
The season changed. On the south slope, Ephraim brought home 100 bushels of grain. He had always done this. 100 bushels, but no more, for he and his wife were barren. On the west slope, Adam brought home 100 bushels, and Esther brought home a son. It was a double harvest. And Walt Whitman came again, as he had promised, and he kissed her lips.
I know why. I have a son. I am a bride again.
I promised you.
Adam married well, and I married well. And our son will marry well, all our sons.
Esther... Why do you exult? This is the time for contrition. Be humble now.
I am better than my sister-in-law. She is barren, and I have given my husband a perfect son. Look in his cradle.
I don't have to look, Esther.
Look for yourself. You don't have to believe me.
Shall I tell you what I believe? Your son is perfect. But so are all men, so are all things. I believe that a leaf of grass is no less than the journey work of the stars. And the pismire is equally perfect in a grain of sand in the egg of the wren. And the running blackberry would adorn the parlors of heaven. And the narrowest hinge in my hands put to scorn all machinery. And the cow, crunching with depressed head, surpasses any statue. And the mouse is miracle enough to stagger sextillions of infidels.
Why do you say this to me?
I came once and I found Adam an animal. And I come now and find you human. And perhaps I want more.
There is nothing more than human. What is there?
I cannot tell you. It is something that you and Adam must distill from yourselves.
You reproach me because I said my sister-in-law has no children.
Yes.
And because I exulted that I have a child.
Yes.
But she's bitter against me. Why shouldn't I exult?
Esther, this is why I came to Adam and why I kissed your lips. I came to say, whoever walks a furlong without sympathy walks to his own funeral dressed in his shroud. These are really the thoughts of all men in all ages and lands. They are not original with me. If they are not yours as much as mine, they are nothing, or next to nothing. If they are not the riddle and the untying of the riddle, they are nothing. This is the grass that grows wherever the land is and the water is. This is the common air that bathes the globe. Whoever walks a furlong without sympathy walks to his own funeral dressed in his shroud.
I'm telling you the legend as I heard it. You will find some of the words written down, but not all. And Walt Whitman went to Adam's brother on Sinai Mountain, which could have been Vermont. And he found Ephraim bitter against the world and his brother.
He is your brother.
Yes, he's my brother. But I am also a man. My name is Ephraim. The name that comes from the word poro. The word that means fruitful. I am misnamed.
No man is ever misnamed. Ephraim, your name is true. You are fruitful.
I have no son.
Your brother's son is your son, Ephraim.
More words. My brother's son belongs to my brother.
And to you, Ephraim. Listen to me. You are your brother. And your brother is you. You are the son of every father, living or dead, and every child born is born to you. So long as a child is born anywhere, no man or woman anywhere is barren.
I don't know who you are. I don't know why you came to Sinai Mountain.
I could have gone anywhere. Truth is true anywhere.
But I'm Ephraim. I'm a man born to die. And I want to leave something, someone, a part of my name and myself. That's what I was born for. Now I'm only half-born.
Ephraim, do you think you are unfulfilled? Every life is its own fulfillment. It is not the earth which is great. It is you. The whole theory of the universe is dedicated unerringly to one single individual. Namely, to you.
Ephraim thought this through. He took his hand from the plow and spread his own calloused fingers, the 10 calloused fingers of a sovereign individual.
If the universe is for me, because I am an individual...
Yes, Ephraim.
Then it is also for my brother, isn't it? And my brother's brother. We are each absolute, and yet each a part of each other. Is that what you mean?
But Walt Whitman had disappeared. It was as though Ephraim had distilled the thought from himself. And perhaps he had. That day, Adam and Ephraim left their plows in the field and went home to speak to their wives. And each said,
I have been selfish.
They were separated by land, but the words were the same.
I have forgotten my brother.
And Adam said,
Esther, we shall have children to provide for our old age. But Ephraim won't.
And Ephraim said,
my brother has more mouths to feed than I.
There was coincidence here. Two brothers, each producing 100 bushels of grain, each fighting the soil for existence, even as animals fight for existence. Each human with jealousy, human with bitterness, human with exultation. And now, each rising. Rising toward what?
Esther, help me pack 10 bushels with grain. Tonight, when it is dark, I shall carry them to Ephraim's farm. He'll be provided for his old age.
Why, if we can spare 10 bushels of grain, I'll bring them to Adam's farm when it's dark. He doesn't have to know.
And together, although they were separated by land, they said,
Let him think the Lord has provided.
It's dark enough, Adam. Now, don't lose the grain in the night.
I won't, Esther. Stay with the child. I'll be home as quickly as I can.
And on the other side of the mountain, Ephraim lifted 10 bushels and said to his wife,
shouldn't take very long, but I'll have to be careful. Adam's a proud man.
And so in the night, while the crickets draped the mountain and the darkness hung like a black lantern, Adam and Ephraim, carrying 10 bushels of grain, passed each other in the night. Immortal man, the individual, thinking of his brother. Where was Walt Whitman during this night? I don't know. Was he alive or dead or not even born? I don't know. And Did he laugh when in the morning the brothers each awoke and went to his storage bin and found it full?
Esther!
Jenny!
I swear I took out 10 bushels.
It is a rational world. 10 is a rational number preceded by 9 digits. It is a useful measure of weight. 10 is 10. It must have been an error, a delusion. The previous night's journey was only a dream. And so they tried again that night.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 bushels of grain. Wife, you're a witness. I must be losing my mind. The storage bin is full.
They tried a third night. I don't know whether it is true, but they say that Walt Whitman came to Sinai Mountain, which could have been Vermont, to watch immortal man straining toward divinity. It was a night blacker than a wolf's mouth, and not a cricket sang, not a leaf stirred. The only sound in the night was the sound of Adam, a name which means man, and the sound of Ephraim, a name which derives from a word meaning fruitful. 2 men carrying 10 bushels of grain, laden with individual sovereignty. And in the blackness of the night, they stumbled on the same path and came toward each other. They could not see one another. They could not hear one another. And so they collided. And instantly they knew.
Brother.
It was the whole meaning. Brother. They held one another in the dark. It was all plain to them.
The planting. The ripening. And the harvest.
For this, Walt Whitman came to Sinai Mountain. For he had foreseen this. And Adam knew then what Walt Whitman has told me and what I will tell my children. That never since the beginning of time was the earth so close to heaven as it was on that night.
The child said, "What is the grass?" Fetching it to me with full hands, how could I answer the child? I do not know what it is any more than he. I guess it is the handkerchief of the Lord. And I know that the hand of God is the elder hand of my own. And I know that the Spirit of God is the eldest brother of my own. And that all the men ever born are also my brothers.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Daniel G. Ross, Chairman of the National Planning and Campaign Committee of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Mr. Ross.
In these days of international tension and conflict, there is no message more suited to the times than these great lines of Walt Whitman. Camarado, I give you my hand. Shall we stick by each other as long as we live? Throughout the ages, Jews lived under conditions which necessarily focused all their efforts on mere survival. Adherence to both the ritual and moral law afforded to many personal salvation or self-fulfillment. But neither such survival nor such personal salvation is enough. Judaism calls upon all peoples to accept the moral law as it applies to all mankind everywhere. This universal aspect of Judaism must be emphasized and expanded if we are to achieve that which Walt Whitman so eagerly sought, a spiritual democracy throughout the world. This world brotherhood can be achieved only by the fundamental affirmation by all faiths of their highest ethical principles. These religious teachings, once learned, must not be merely an intellectual exercise, but rather the very foundation of living. We cannot safely tamper with human institutions and habits unless we know how they came to be. We cannot cope with the reluctance and refusal of some nations and some groups to submerge their own self-centered aims unless we begin with a historical approach. We cannot understand how this universal aspect of Judaism as a world faith can help all nations attain an enduring world peace unless we as Jews understand what Judaism really is. We should not be permitted to grow up in ignorance of our people's great ethical tradition and history. Opportunities are available for ministers, priests, and rabbis to study the common goals of their respective faiths and the way that they may together contribute to the betterment of mankind. It is now essential that all the members of all faiths engage in intensive study of their own past and their own religious civilization as a frame foundation upon which world brotherhood can be built. To this end, our institutions of higher learning should dedicate themselves and for that purpose develop appropriate forums. The next step beyond that will be the creation of universal schools, where all faiths will generate the kind of goodwill relations that will be deep and abiding. There they may learn to respect themselves, and at the same time respect the differences of conviction and belief as part of the essential pattern of a true democracy. We shall then be grateful for the brotherhood that springs from common studies, common enthusiasms, and a common heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. Eternal Light Drama today, The Legend of the Mountain, was written by Morton Wishengrad and starred Raymond Massey as Walt Whitman. Alexander Scorby was the narrator. The music was composed by Morris Momorsky and conducted by Milton Kadams. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. The production was under the direction of Edward King. To present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.